And now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is potpourri. Each of my guests is discussing an interesting topic, no two of which are alike. My next guest specializes in women's histories. She explores a unique aspect of history, which is the heroic journey of Australia's convict women. We'll discuss her latest book, The Tin Ticket. And if you have questions or if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Deborah Swiss is a management consultant and author and specializes in women's histories, gender equality, and work-life balance. Her work has been received attention from Time Magazine, Fortune, The Wall Street Journal, Harvard Business Review, and the Federal Glass Ceiling Commission report. She's also appeared on the Today Show as a gender issues expert. She holds her master's in education and her PhD in education from Harvard University, and she got her BA magna cum laude from Bowdoin College. She's worked at Harvard University for 13 years in a variety of administrative positions, including a position as assistant dean at the Harvard Graduate School of Design. Her latest book is titled The Tin Ticket, The Heroic Journey of Australia's Convict Women. Welcome to the show, Deborah. How are you today?
I'm fine, Bill. And how are you doing?
Well, I am doing terrific. Let's just start right with the title of your book, The Tin Ticket. What is The Tin Ticket and what does it signify?
Well, in the 19th century, 25,000 girls and women were shipped from England, Ireland, Scotland, and Wales as quote-unquote tamers and breeders to a new colony where men outnumbered women 9-1, and the British wanted to beat the French to colonize this rich new land. And no women would go voluntarily, so they used an old law that said if you commit any crime, stealing stockings or a loaf of bread, you can be imprisoned in any British colony. And the sad part of the story is that these poor girls who could either be a prostitute, which was not a crime, or they could steal food or clothing to survive, were sentenced to 7 to 10 years in Australia, but there was no way back. And they were shipped on converted slave ships with tin tickets around their neck. But the miraculous part of the story is that the vast majority of these 25,000 girls and women not only survived, but they thrived and prospered and became the founding mothers of modern Australia. And in fact, 22% of Australians are descended from convict men and women today.
Really? It's 22%? Mm-hmm. I had read the number that wasn't quite that high, but that's fascinating. Well, let's talk about this just a little bit more because, you know, in the United States, we've got the three strikes law, but that really pales in significance to the British 19th century one strike law for women.
Right.
And what was interesting to me is this old law, fewer than 2% of the women that were convicted were violent felons. 65% of the women that were convicted were first-time offenders, and they were sentenced to exile for life. And you profile several women in the book, which I just found fascinating. But here are some of the crimes of the people that you profile in the book. Agnes McMillan was convicted for shoplifting warm stockings. She was 12 years old, and she was orphaned, and she was starving. Janet Houston, also convicted for shoplifting. She was also 12 years old and orphaned. Bridget McMullen stole a bucket of milk and a petticoat. The milk was for her children. And then widow Ludlow Tedder stole 11 spoons and a bread basket. She was the mother of four. She was exported and took only her youngest daughter with her. The other children had to stay in Britain. So first of all, how many of these women were exiled in total? And how many, you know, just talk to me about that whole process, I guess, is the best
way
to say this.
Well, in total, 162,000 women, men, and children were shipped to the other side of the world by their own country. And 25,000 of those who were transported were women. And one of the questions I asked myself, did anyone in the world care about the fact that the scope of their punishments far exceeded the scope of their crime? And the answer is yes, one woman did, the radical Quaker reformer Elizabeth Gurney Fry, who met with nearly half of the 25,000 women who were transported. And she taught them skills. She taught them how to sew so they could make quilts. She set up a schoolroom inside Newgate Jail in London so that as they awaited transport for 4 or 5 or 6 months, their children could learn to read and write and would have a skill. And one of the reasons I was delighted to discover Elizabeth Gurney Fry is that I asked myself, how did these folks who had to move through really desperation and injustice, being exiled for life by their own country, ultimately move to love and redemption and become loving mothers and grandmothers. And I think one of the answers is that Elizabeth Gurney Fry was one of the people who extended just a ray of hope to these girls and women when they needed it the most.
No,
I love the theme of one person can make a difference.
Well, that is, it's a very good theme, and it's a very uplifting story about Elizabeth Gurney Fry. Let me ask you this, though. You know, you say not too many people cared about the story during the time, in its contemporary time. The bigger question is, here we are hundreds of years later, why haven't we heard about this story before, and how did you uncover the story?
Well, that's an excellent question. Until about 20 years ago, the story was really covered up, and in fact, half the girls were transported to Van Diemen's Land, which is present-day Tasmania. And as part of the cover-up, the British government actually changed the name of Van Diemen's Land to Tasmania to cover up this terrible piece of history. And for many, many years, many generations, it was considered the convict stain to be descended from these folks. So people would go into the archives in Australia and systematically destroy records, as did the government. And then recently, when the true story became revealed that these were really survivors, these are the strongest of the strong, they were incredibly resourceful people, it became kind of cool to have convict ancestry. And now people are actually looking for convicts in their past in Australia. and really, the story came to me in a surprising way. In 2004, I traveled to Tasmania, and I signed up for 2 wilderness treks with the idea of writing some environmental articles to fund my trip. And by some miracle, I managed to complete the 80-kilometer overland trek through hailstorms and lightning strikes with a group of hikers who are much more experienced than I am. And as I literally limped into a post office in the middle of Tasmania, I got chatting with someone who is a Tasmanian artist who does big art installations about the 25,000 girls and women who became really the founding mothers of her country. And I knew I had found the story of a lifetime. And at first I was, infuriated that this, how history keeps repeating itself with, millions of folks enslaved today around the world. But then the story really took a turn when I met descendants of the women I wrote about and spent a month traveling with them and following the convict trail of the great-great-grandmothers. So the story really became one of how do people triumph over tragedy? How do people find that little kernel of humanity that's just enough to pull them through another day? So the tone of the story changed dramatically, and it explains, I think, why it took me 6.5 years as I went back to ship's journals and court records and diaries and newspaper articles, because I wanted to do justice to these women who've been really misrepresented in history. And so much of history leaves out women, half the population, and so much of history leaves out, ordinary folks who run the shops and manage the farms and care for the children and raise families. And really, Agnes, Janet, Bridget, Ludlow were ordinary women who became extraordinary because of what they were cast into.
My guest is Deborah Swiss, author of the new book, The Tin Ticket, The Heroic Journey of Australia's Convict Women. And Deborah, in the book, you write about a very despicable place. It's called Cascades Female Factory. It's now in Hobart, Tasmania, which you mentioned before was formerly Van Diemen's Land. Tell us the story about the female factory. What sort of place was it? What sort of life was there in the Cascades female factory?
Well, the girls and women had to endure 4 months in Newgate Jail or Dublin Jail, and then 4 to 6 months at sea, where they were housed just above the bilge. But I began to look for clues. How did they even get to Cascades in the first place? So when they were at sea, I found in the diary of a minister that the girls would tear up the Bibles they were given because they couldn't read, and they made playing cards and curling papers for their hair. So by the time they reached Van Diemen's Land, the Cascades Female Factory, they had built some solidarity, and they had found ways, ingenious ways, to hold on to just a little bit of their humanity. And there were 300 women imprisoned at any time at the Cascades Female Factory as they awaited assignment to local settlers. And I asked myself, as I did about the ship's journey, how did they find the will to go on another day when they're fed watery ox head soup every day for 7 years, and many of them were abused by the masters for whom they worked. And I discovered that there was this wild subculture that the local press in Van Diemen's Land called the flash mob. And women would sing and dance under a moonlit Mount Wellington, and they would smuggle in gaudy jewelry and bright scarves. And, you know, their heads were shaved, they're pockmarked and they're skinny, but they dared to be human and they dared to be beautiful. And I even discovered that they managed to meet the men who would later become their husbands. They devised this elaborate scheme whereby they smuggled love letters inside chickens that were delivered to corrupt wardens at the Cascades VMO factory as a way of communicating with the men who would in many cases become their husbands. So in this damp, dark valley where they were malnourished and often abused, they managed through, I think, what was really a sisterhood of sorrow and solidarity to pull one another through the worst kinds of challenges and abuse you can imagine. And once freed, the vast majority survived and became loving mothers and grandmothers. And I just think that that's a miracle.
It is. My guest is Deborah Swiss, and we're talking about her book, The Tin Ticket. So in your answer there, Deborah, you mentioned that a lot of these prisoners were then doled out to settlers in Australia. Were they indentured servants at that point? Were they practically slaves working on these stations, as they call them in Australia?
Yeah, they were. They were essentially slaves. And I was reading in The Diary of the Beagle by Charles Darwin. He talks about being waited on by the convict men and women and when he was visiting some wealthy homes in Sydney. And he especially made terrible remarks about the women, saying that they were lowest of the low and these vile, despicable creatures. And I'm here to tell your listeners that Charles Darwin, you know, made one big mistake, that these were not the weakest of the weak, but these were the strongest, most resourceful, most resilient women who I've ever had the pleasure of meeting by stepping back in time.
Well, I guess it just goes to show the prevailing attitudes of the time reflected in Charles Darwin's words. My guest is Deborah Swift. So, Deborah, let's take a look at a modern-day Australian girl. And in the book, you talk about Keely, who's age 12.
Mm-hmm.
Her great, 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 great grandmother was one of these convict women. What would you think that Keely, who's age 12 now, what would she think of her great-great-great-great-great-grandmother?
Well, I actually asked her that because I had the pleasure of staying with her grandma, who's one of my good friends now. And I said, Keely, what do you think about Ludlow? And she stood up very straight and with a big smile on her face, said she was a very, very strong woman.
And that she was. There's no doubt to endure all that she endured. My guest is Deborah Swiss. We're talking about her book, The Tin Ticket, The Heroic Journey of Australia's Convict Women. Deborah, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, The Tin Ticket?
Well, I hope that they'll take away a couple of things. One is that if you're looking back at your past, you often have to think about who writes our past. It's often people in power. It's often the elite. So if you're doing some ancestry research, I would encourage people to go back to original records. And in terms of the women in The Tin Ticket, if I'm having a bad day, I think about Agnes, Jenna, and Ludlow, and I hope that readers will find the same kind of inspiration that I have, that really human beings have an incredible capacity to move through struggle and change, and particularly if we rely on one another and friendships, and a little humor, a little rebellion, lots of resiliency, that we really do have an incredible capacity to pull us through the worst of times. And as I think about the remarkable women in The Tin Ticket, I think about the way that they led their lives once they were freed, with dignity and with grace and with forgiveness. And I'm really left in awe of these women, and I really think that they exhibit the rather magnificent capacity for nobility that I really think exists within every human being.
Well, now, Australia is also one of the most liberated countries in the world in terms of male-female relationships.
Yes.
What respect do you think that these convict women played in Australia's modern-day 21st century attitude towards women?
A big role, because many of the women migrated to the goldfields in mainland Australia, where the Eureka Rebellion took place, which was kind of their version of taxation without representation. And it was the first modern democracy in the world, fueled by freed convicts and Irish activists. And it was the second place after New Zealand that women won the right to vote, one of the first places to have an active and effective union movement, and the first place in the world that women could own property. So out of this terrible piece of history arose, for the time, one of the most progressive societies in the world. And I know you mentioned you'd been to Australia, and I love the exuberance for life and the warmth and the humor. And you've got to think that some of that comes from the 162,000 women, men, and children who were shipped from Great Britain. And, you know, many folks are descended from the convicts today. And they played a really important role in founding modern Australia. That's really their legacy. It's a very different legacy from 100 years ago. And now it's a great source of pride for many folks in Australia.
That it is. My guest has been Deborah Swiss. Deborah, if people want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
You can go to my website, which is deborahswiss.com, deborahswiss.com, and the book is available at local bookstores. I always encourage people to go to independent bookstores, and it's also available on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and your local libraries.
That is great. Deborah, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you, Billy. I enjoyed it.
Thank you.